Well, we do have time for questions, so you know the rules. You put your hand up, you wait for a microphone to come to you, say who you are and what your organisation is, and just ask one question, please, because there's lots who want to ask one after you. First question, please. A hand up anywhere?
Yeah,
here we are, down the front. Oh, okay, you're closest there.
Hello, Jennifer Stafford from the Australian Institute of Company Directors. I'd like to ask a question of Bob Gregory, following on from the information he presented and the differentials between Western Australia and Queensland and their economic development or the capacity for that and for the other states. It was suggested to me that the development in those states, the infrastructure development was left to private development, and that that was not the policy of governments in the other states, and that do you think, if that is the case, that that can contribute to the opportunity to develop more in Western Australia and Queensland than in any other states?
I'm sorry, I virtually know everything, but I don't know the answer to that question.
I'm sorry.
my guess is the public-private split is not playing a big role differentially across states. That would be my guess, but I actually don't really know.
Would any other panel member like to comment? You'll have to, you remember what Pope said, a little learning is a dangerous thing. Drink deep or taste not the Pyrian spring. So you need to get more info. Next question, please. In the front here.
Thank you. It's Michael Block from WorkCover New South Wales. My question is for Bob Kinnean from AMP. And that is, Bob, if things pan out the way that you think it might, and that is that we see a softening in Australian residential property prices, can you please tell me what might be the implications for three particular areas of the economy? Creditworthiness of Australian banks, consumer spending, and economic conditions generally.
Can I pledge uncertainty under that answer? Okay, very interesting question. So the creditworthiness of Australian banks, it's obviously a negative. Okay. To the extent, and I want to clarify, I want to put in a global perspective, that Australian banks have been much more prudent than their American counterparts in terms of lending. And if you're a policymaker like the Reserve Bank, you would differentiate between the subprime market in the US, which was 13% of house lending, whereas in Australia the equivalent estimate is 1%. But it's nonetheless, if you have a significant downside risk to house prices and your credit cycle now turns ominous, then the banks will have to increase their provisioning. Now, we've seen probably an example of that in some ways with Southwest Sydney, and it's quite interesting if I could relate that to Professor Gregory's analysis, where Southwest Sydney probably features the unskilled labour market in a way, and didn't benefit from the commodity boom, and now we're seeing a quite significant weakness in house prices there. In terms of consumer spending, we've already seen what I would consider to be increased caution by households. Now, probably that relates more to the equity market wealth effect, plus the impact of the interest rate tightenings that we've had since August. We've had four. But when you have an environment where the house price is turning down, you're obviously going to have that negative wealth effect running through. The other aspect in terms of economic conditions, let me make it quite clear. I don't think a recession is immediately on the horizon, even if we probably have, if we have, perhaps, a 5 to 10% fall in house prices, because it's important to note that the commodity boom so far is intact. And from a national income or GDP perspective, it's a plus 3% stimulus to the economy this year. However, if I could put it in a slightly historical basis, I would say that we are closer to the next recession than we are to the last recession, bearing in mind that we've had the longest expansion phase in the last 60 years, and it's been 17 years. So, in that sense, we should start to price in the risk of a significant slowdown and a recession. within a 3 to 5 year time frame. Now, hopefully it won't occur, but, you know, history tells us that business cycles do.
Yeah, I might add to that. That's very, very much my view, I suppose, because I want to say one extra thing, and that is that the Reserve Bank is attempting to generate a significant slowdown. Mm-hmm. That is, they believe that this is the way that they're going to bring inflation back to 2.5%. So if you look at their forecasts, they're forecasting in 2009, they're forecasting GDP growth of about 2.2, whereas, you know, in the past it's often grown at 4 or 4.5. So it's not going to take very much of a mistake there to go from, you know, 2.2 to 1.5 till you'll see very significant increases in unemployment, for example. So the authorities have built in a significant slowdown. And what's going on now, and what they're finding hard, is the balancing of how tight to slow the economy down through their instruments to offset the boom that's coming in through the export side. Now, the only thing that will change that is if suddenly inflation itself comes down. If inflation itself were to come down, then they wouldn't have to worry too much about slowing the economy. But I don't think inflation itself is going to come down that quickly. And so I think, you know, we are in for a significant slowdown within the next 18 months. Now, how significant that is, who knows? But I think you've got to be betting on the slowdown rather than the opposite.
Mm. Over here, Bob.
Frank Newman from State Street. Bob Kinnean from AMP on the question table again. China, strong for longer. Do you see the large labour forces in play in China and India? Do you see the accessing technology to support longer productivity improvements in those markets helping to maintain their growth for an extended period of time, or just the domestic market itself is the primary driver?
From my point of view, well, what I want to do is challenge the assumption that, you know, China is an automatic 10% growth story, which seemed to be the pricing, particularly with resource shares, up until 2 or 3 months ago. Now, in terms of the labour market in China, there's this dramatic transition from the rural sector to the cities, and this is the process of urbanisation and industrialisation. So I don't think that China's going to come to a sudden stop, and we're going to have a recession, as we know, as a contraction of economic activity. But we are going to have a moderation in growth significant enough that we, Australia, as a major trading partner, will feel those winds. Now, in terms of the labour market itself, directly, sure, the technology story will underpin China. Because China, if we think about it in terms of development, is largely a catch-up story, okay, to the rest of the world. If we look at it in terms of income per head of population, China is, say, $7,000 equivalent, to Australia, $35,000, or the US, $40,000. So it's still got an enormous way to go. But I'd caution everyone who thinks it's going to all happen in 10 or 20-year time frame to catch up to the rest of the world. It might be a 50 to 80-year time frame in that sense.
Gregory, do you want to... Yeah, I agree with that. I think the idea that China's going to grow at 10 or 11 every year, year after year, is wrong. We've already mentioned, Bob already mentioned earlier, one of the things that will slow it up. One thing that will slow it up is domestic inflation is very high in China, and it's been increasing. And while you can think of particular reasons, you know, like pig diseases and so on, it's just basically the economy is now growing too fast. And the authorities have been trying to slow it for about 18 months now, and they've been completely unsuccessful. So they keep trying again.
and they just had another round of trying to file. So at some point, they're going to begin to have some success, I think. And then when that happens, the Chinese growth will slow. Now, it's not going to go to zero. I mean, mm-hmm. a recession in China means you grow at 7 or 6 or something like yeah. that. But it will slow, and that'll top price its way into, as you said, the share prices of all those people who export to China. And then it will bounce back again, probably. Mm-hmm. But it will certainly slow, in my view.
Thanks. Wait a moment. There we are. Yes, Bob. You had your hand up several times.
Thank you. Bob Cooper, Institutional Development. Thank you again, Peter, for three great speakers, a humorous economist, an optimistic banker, and a professor who suggests we all migrate to Queensland. My question to the group is this. Does Australia have any impact on the global pricing of credit? Do we have any standing in that whatsoever?
The banker.
Well, there's a hospital fund. I think the short answer is in a material sense, no. In a material sense, no. But on the other side, you know, as a major economy, clearly the demand for credit, the extent to which the banks are financing themselves in the international capital markets, then that demand and the extent to which we are relying on international capital will have some impact, but I wouldn't say it's material.
We are a price taker, not a price maker.
Yeah.
We have time for one more question, then I'm going to... There we are. Hi, James Halliday from Baker McKenzie. I just have a question coming out of the comment made earlier at the start of the presentation that I think the underlying inflation rate hit 4.5% today on an annualised basis. And I recall a few weeks ago that some comments were made in the press that you know, the Reserve Bank target rate, 2-3%, is perhaps structurally unsustainable sort of over the longer term. And I was just curious, I suppose this question to Joseph, but also to the panel, just curious what you see as being the sort of natural or underlying inflation rate for Australia, and whether the 2-3% band is sustainable over longer term.
Well, I'm going to give that as a hospital pass, but as a non-economist, I might ask Bob to. I have a view, but perhaps the more informed view is
perhaps Professor Gregory, given he's an RBA former RBA, and then I'll make some comments.
The hard thing about this question is whether you want to talk about reality or perceptions. The reality is that, over the next 4 years, the 2-3% target will be inoperative. Right? That is, you'll essentially be outside the target. And then the question becomes, you know, do you want a target when you're outside of it for a while? And the governor of the bank has spoken, actually, on this very point. And this is not exactly his language, but what he sort of says is, well, you know, we may well be out of the target for quite a while, but a target's still a target. And it anchors people. You know, that's what they expect. That's what they know we're trying to do. And then I would say, oh, yes, but how long can you fool them? And he would say, well, the central bank has built up quite a bit of credibility. We can fool them quite a while, providing we can actually get back, right? Within 4 or 5 years. So that's what I mean about it. So that's exactly more or less what he says.
Thanks.
He said he didn't say fool them.
Sorry. Thanks. Do you want to add to that, or was that all said?
I think you've basically summed it up. I think Australia's been served well by the inflation target. It does enforce a discipline on the central bank and the government, in a way. Now, if you look at the past 10 years, it's averaged 2.7%. Now, I've got to admit that in the near term, given the way commodity prices are performing, it's next to impossible to achieve that target in the short term. Australia cannot turn back the rise in oil prices by itself. However, if you've got a discipline and a focus, and this is the whole thing about inflation targeting, it gives something for the central bank to do. And in that way, it served us well. I don't think we should change the bathwater just because of the short-term disappointment.
Thanks. I think one thing coming out of all that is that monetary policy has been carrying too big a load, and it's about time there's a bit more attention to fiscal policy. That's my closing comment. No one can criticise or ask me a question on that, because I'm going to ask Dr. Rickard to come up and propose a vote of thanks to our very excellent speakers, who I think have given us lots of things to think about, a balanced view, and don't go away feeling too gloomy, because I think there's light over at the end of the tunnel down there.
Well, thank you, Tim, for chairing so